Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids Podcast, where we explore what connects us all in our yoga practice and in our lives. This is where I talk to people about their stories, who they are, what they've been through, and where they're going. And in this podcast, that's what we explore. I believe deep down inside, we're all connected, which explains why we bring ourselves to the top of our mat every day. Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids. Welcome to the next edition of the Heartbreak Kids. I'm here with Mark Garreau, and Mark Garreau is a good friend of mine, and I'm really grateful to have him on the show. He runs Great Lakes Ashtanga Yoga, a place where I've traveled to several times to hang out with him and his wife, Sarah. And, you know, he is running a program and he's teaching workshops. And, you know, he has a really interesting and compelling story because he comes from a little bit different a background than all of us. And so, Mark, I'm grateful to have you on the show today.
Thanks, Taylor. I'm really happy to join you.
Yeah. So let's just kind of get into the thick of it. Tell me who Mark was when he was 20 years old.
Okay. So when I was 20 years old, I was actually living in Okinawa, Japan.
Doing what?
I was a U.S. Marine. My original job in the Marine Corps was communications. I was a computer nerd, basically. And if you know anything about me now, you know that I hate computers.
Hate computers, yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely the wrong job for me, for sure. But anyway, so that's what my job was. And actually that summer, it was July of 2000. Mm-hmm. I got sent for a month to South Korea, to Pohang, Korea, to do a little deployment. And the ROK Marines, the Republic of Korean Marines, mm-hmm. are mountain warfare experts, because it's a, you know, they have mountains over there.
So, yeah,
wow. They're hardcore in the mountains. These guys are tough.
Okay.
And we did a joint training with them. And I was just, like I said, a little computer nerd. And I, you know, was in charge of this, this field, setup basically. So like the command center and all these different little tents, you know, had their little, things set up so they could communicate back and forth and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And, that was all set up and running and just fine. And the infantry guys were out doing this fun mountain stuff. And, the colonel that I was working with one day was like, "Hey, Garreau," he's like, "what do you say, I don't need you here." He's like, "Why don't you go play in the mountains with the infantry guys?" I was like, "Okay, sir, that sounds
amazing."
Yeah. Yeah, like definitely, you know. And you know, I grew up rock climbing, you know. So when I was younger, I was climbing a bunch. So I was really stoked when he said that. So anyway, they put me through this little week long mountain warfare course, and I blew away most of the infantry guys. I did really well.
Wow.
So yeah, so this lieutenant colonel, he basically kind of bent over backwards for me and got me orders to a mountain warfare base, in Bridgeport, California. I don't know why he helped me out, but for some reason he decided to just like, "Hey, you know, I know a guy who is at this, who's a commanding officer at this base." And, so he helped me get orders for that base. And that's where I spent the rest of my time.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, that really shaped the rest of my, you know, the rest of my story.
Wow. Well, so give me like the mindset of why you joined the Marines in the first place. I mean, were you a bad kid or did you feel like you didn't have like discipline? Because I know that sort of attracts that type of person. So I'm wondering, like, were you one of those kids?
It does. You're right. But no, I wasn't.
You were a good kid.
I was kind of a nerd in high school. I didn't really. But I always looked up to my older brother a lot. My older brother enlisted in the Marine Corps when I was a freshman in high school. And then he ended up getting commissioned and became an officer. And he's still actually in today.
Wow.
But I just always really looked up to my brother, Joe. And everything Joe did, I wanted to do. You know, he was always bigger, faster, stronger than me. Yeah. So I just wanted to, you know, I always tried to, you know, be on his heels basically. So that's why I went in.
Wow.
I didn't really know what I was getting into, to tell you the truth.
And I mean, was it more than what you thought, or was it harder than what you thought? Like, I mean, did you need discipline at that age too?
I wrestled all through grade school, high okay. school, middle school. So I was fairly disciplined. Okay. But you know, I was kind of, I was a little bit of a coddled child.
Got it.
Yeah, my mom just was like, very, she kind of micromanaged us, you know, as kids. And I was the youngest of the three. So I was immature.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when I went to boot camp, I didn't know how to use a laundry machine yet.
Wow.
My mom always did the laundry. Yeah. So here I am, like at 2 a.m. on fire watch trying to figure out how to do my laundry.
Wow.
Yeah. It really helped me grow up and become an adult.
Yeah. I mean, but I feel like from other conversations that we've had, you've always told me that you really like thrived and loved it though.
I did.
Yeah. And why?
Well, so I was a attention deficit hyperactive kid.
Okay.
Growing up, and I think the just the not necessarily the discipline, but just the structure that they give you in a day. You know, you get up at this time, you put this outfit on, you show up to this place, you do this job. You know, it's very structured. That worked really well for my mind. It helped keep me focused. And you know, I mean, it sounds a lot like Ashtanga yoga too.
It does sound like a lot. Yeah, it's like a perfect segue. So when did you get out?
I got out in 2003.
Okay. And were you ever like in, you know, like were you ever deployed anywhere besides like South Korea like you were talking about?
No, never deployed for like a, you know, for like a wartime operation.
Okay.
Nothing like that, no.
Gotcha. But when you shifted over to California, like you were basically learning like mountain warfare, is that what you were doing?
Yeah, so I went through a mountain warfare. They call it the Mountain Leaders Course.
Okay,
but I went through that course, and so the base in Bridgeport, California, has somewhere around 150 Marines stationed at, you know, typically, and it's a really small base. Like Camp Pendleton has like, you know, 45 or 50,000 Marines.
Right.
You know, I mean, so it's a really tiny base. But the whole purpose of the base is just to train Marines, how to survive, at altitude and cold weather, how to navigate a cliff, you know, things like this, you know,
yeah.
How to navigate a slope that is covered in snow or ice, whatever. So,
wow.
So we get a lot of Marines, from like Camp Pendleton, Camp Lejeune, 29 Palms, California,
yeah.
All these places, they come there and we'll get, you know, 800 or 900 Marines, that will come in to the base for like 8 weeks. And they do a training package. So I was one of the instructors aided with their training. Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy because like all of my family has lived in Camp Lejeune, Paris Island. I mean, like we've lived at all of these Camp Pendleton, 29 Palms, like all of those places like are very familiar with me because like I've had a sister there or I've had a son or a nephew there. I've had like my grandpa was in the army and he was part of the first, like army rangers. If you go all the way back to like the 1890s, like, you know, my, you know, ancestors that came over to the United States, they were in the German army. So I mean, like we come from like a kind of a long, line of Marines and army and obviously, you know, Germany, army. So it's kind of crazy. My sister currently is in Paris Island right now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, and so you got out in 2003, where did Mark go from there? Where did you go from there?
All right. So this is, not a lot of people know this about me. You know, my good friends, obviously, but, it's not something I like always, you know, think to tell people. But so when I got out of the Marine Corps, I had like basically two job skills. I knew how to climb mountains and shoot guns, you know, and I moved back to Ohio.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, what do I do now? What do I do in Ohio?
Right.
Yeah. So no mountains here.
No,
so I ended
zero.
Up, what's that? Yeah. Zero mountains. So what I did is I went through, I kind of missed the Marine Corps a little bit. So I was thinking like, I need something kind of like paramilitary, you know, kind of like that, you know, a brotherhood, whatever. So I went through Firefighter Academy. I went through EMT school, mm-hmm. and I went through Police Academy.
Wow.
And whenever I got done with all those, I started putting my applications out. And the first test I went to was to be a police officer.
Wow.
And I got hired.
So you were a cop. You were a cop. Wow. You're like too nice to be a cop, I think.
I don't think I was a very good police officer.
How many people did you let out of tickets? I just want to know that for random fact.
probably a large percentage.
Like, I feel sorry for you. You can go ahead and go. It's fine. So.
Yeah. It wasn't a good job for me at all. It was not a good fit. I wasn't happy there. I didn't have anything in common with any of the people I worked with. You know, I was into rock climbing and running and lifting. And most of the guys I was working with were hunters, fishermen, you know, like just different hobbies. And I had literally no friends at work. And that's hard.
Yeah, alone. That is super
you know,
hard.
I felt like an outsider, you know. And then it was a stressful job that I didn't particularly like either. So I only did that for a year. I did that for 1 year. And wow.
That's a short amount of time. Usually those guys like do it for 15, 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like they get like 10 years or they get, you know, like, yeah, usually they're long time employees. So.
Yeah. And it was a good paying job, you know, it was in a good area. But I just wasn't happy doing it. So I stopped doing that and, started managing, an outfitter shop that sold like backpacks and rock climbing gear and hiking boots and sleeping bags, tents, that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah. Cause you felt more connected to that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I kind of went a little bit like opposite extreme for a while. And, you know, I had a really good friend, he's since passed away, but we can get into that later maybe. But, a real good friend of mine who we did a lot of climbing together. He and I just kind of became bums. We just like, we're like, okay, we're going to live, you know, in our tent in West Virginia at the base of these, you know, routes and stuff as much as we can and work as little as we need to. We're going to work just enough to buy some food and gas, wow. you know? So, we kind of became bums for a little bit. But we got really, really strong. We became very competent climbers. And we did a lot of really fun, a lot of really scary summer and winter trips together.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah. So
how long did that escapade happen for? Like a year or something or longer?
No, that was like from age, I think, 25 to like 28 maybe.
Wow.
Something like that, yeah. So I was married before Sarah. So I got divorced when I was 27 and it went on a little longer. And then, you know, I met Sarah when I was 29. I was, it was about 3 years where I was just like living, live, eat, sleep, climbing. You know, that was it. It was all about climbing.
And you're living in the back of your Subaru?
Yeah. I mean, not technically I had an address, but yeah, I was in my Subaru a lot. Yes.
Got it.
Yeah.
Well, and so how did Ashtanga Yoga enter the picture? Because I think when we first initially met, you guys came to one of my Cleveland workshops and, you know, like I think we also met like during the David Kyle workshop and you guys sort of like, you know, entered the picture. And I mean, I felt like you guys were strong practitioners like from the very get go.
So the way Ashtanga came into play, we have to kind of rewind a bit back to my Marine Corps days. So when I was like 20 or 21, I injured my back. When I was doing all the mountain warfare stuff, I was carrying 60, 70, 80 pound backpacks up and down mountains all day long. And, just kind of overworked my back or whatever, bad posture, a lot of weight, you know,
right.
Lack of stretching, lack of, much, you know, intelligence about diet at the time. So I hurt my back and, the recommendation from a lot of my superiors were like, oh, go to medical and get that documented as much as you can. Like the more you get that documented, go get a surgery, go do this, go do that. The more that happens, you're going to be taken care of when you get out of the Marine Corps. You'll have, like, you know,
bigger compensation package.
Yeah,
something?
Compensation. Yeah. You have like medical compensation, you know, for like, you know, the rest of your life, basically, you know, disability checks, that kind of stuff. Yeah. So, but to me, I was like, that just doesn't seem quite right. You know, I don't think I need a surgery. I don't think I need all this stuff. I think, you know, the other guys are carrying these packs up and down mountains and they're not hurt. So what am I doing wrong? You know? So I started, really diving into studying anatomy, studying the spine, studying nutrition. And, you know, I always enjoyed working out when I was younger anyway. So this really appealed to me. So I was like, okay, I'll do this stuff. You know, I'll study some more and see if I can fix myself, you know? And during this time, a lot of people just kept mentioning yoga over and over and over again to me. And I kept ignoring it, of course.
Yeah. I mean, who wants to do yoga?
Yeah. We always ignore what we know is good for us, right. You know? So, yeah. So, you know, I kept ignoring it. And I heard it enough times that after a while, I was like, okay, I'm going to go. I was too embarrassed and like nervous, whatever, shy, to go into like a yoga studio.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm just going to buy a DVD and like do it that way, you know? So.
And who is the DVD? I just got to know.
Not even a yogi, actually.
No?
No, it was just like some DVD from Target. and it's just like some fitness lady who's not even a yoga instructor, really. Anyway, so I did this DVD, I'd probably do it 4 or 5 days a week. For a couple months and I'd feel great. And then I would think that I don't need yoga anymore. And I'd throw the DVD aside and, you know, a month would go by and my back would start hurting again. And this is the pattern I kind of lived for a while. And fast forward a couple years down the road, like in like 2005 and 2006, I was doing a lot of climbing, a lot of mountaineering and mountain guiding even. And I was down in Peru in 2005, and in 2006 I was down in Ecuador for extended trips. And I started to notice that a lot of the mountaineers that I was like sharing the hostels with and stuff were old guys. Mm-hmm. These guys were like in their 60s and, you know, probably late 60s, maybe even somewhere in their early 70s. They were not young, but they were some of the top athletes in their field. These guys were like studs.
Right.
And, you know, this whole idea of like longevity started kind of sinking in. I was like, man, these guys all like are really particular about their food. And it was, you know, before it was trendy to be particular about your food.
Right.
And they were all doing like stretching routines in the morning before they'd climb. You know, and I was young and like wake up ready to go and never stretch. I'm like, I'm ready to climb. I'm strong. Let's go. You know? So I was watching how these guys operate, and that made me start thinking about the yoga that I've been doing. And it's like, yeah, maybe I need to get back into that a little more seriously, you know? So yeah, that really like kind of made an impression on me.
Yeah. Did you the video obviously wasn't Ashtanga yoga.
No, it was like a vinyasa, like flow power type thing.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I first found Ashtanga. So after Sarah and I got married, that climbing gym. So we met at the climbing gym that I was working at.
Oh, wow.
That gym was now like an hour away from where Sarah lived. And you know, I moved in with her, and it was silly to keep working there. And so anyway, we weren't going down there and climbing as much anymore. And we were like, man, we need something to do like as a daily, you know, because we were climbing daily before, and now it's like, we're too far away. So what can we do as our daily, like, you know, routine to keep us in shape for our weekend climbing trips? So we started researching yoga a little more and went to a studio a little bit here and there, but none of them had Ashtanga. But anyway, we ended up finding Ashtanga because it's a set sequence. Yeah. And we're like, oh, perfect. This is something that we can do together at home if we just memorize this stuff.
Right.
You know, like that seems possible. So we bought David Swenson's practice manual.
Oh, wow.
And that's how we started learning Ashtanga.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, like recently I talked to Kino, and, you know, like the influence that she's had on like the whole, you know, yoga scene. But then also David Swenson. I mean, that was my first book too. You know, like crazy, like amount of, you know, influence that David Swenson has had just because of that book. I mean, it's really unbelievable.
Yeah, so many people I talked to have started with that book.
Yeah,
you know,
it's my first book.
It's
crazy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know, you mentioned Kino, and at the time she was just really bulking up her YouTube presence. Mm-hmm. So I was watching a ton of Kino videos. So it was like between David's book and then watching little videos on like how to jump through, or, you know, these little tip videos, those were really helped me kind of cultivate my strength. I had a lot of strength from climbing, but I didn't know how to use it right. You know, right. So those videos definitely helped me a lot as well.
Yeah. And so you guys memorized the sequence, and then did you start doing it every day, or how did you guys kind of get hooked on it?
We were doing it, maybe not every single day. We were doing it a lot though, probably 3 or 4 days a week. And I wanted to like learn more. I actually wanted to learn from a teacher, you know? So I started looking around for like, you know, who around here teaches Ashtanga, you know, and your name came up. I saw your name and I did a little research and I found out that you were in India. So I was like, well, I can't go to him. And then I saw, yeah, and I think this was 2013, maybe. Yeah. I think it was like October of 2013 that I found that Yoga on High in Columbus had David Swenson coming in to do a 1 week, teacher intensive, they called it, I think.
Wow.
So yeah, and you were gone. You were either in India or away teaching somewhere, but I'm pretty sure you were in India.
Yeah, and I was teaching there at the time. Like I had a Mysore program there too. So
yes, mm-hmm. So I did this training, and I'd never done Mysore before. Just, you know, Sarah and I would practice by ourselves, but you know, there was no one ever there to correct us or tell us we're doing something wrong or whatever. You know, so I went to you know, your program in the morning. Mm-hmm. I got there a few days early before the course started. And, I don't remember who, there was a couple, young ladies that were assisting and teaching. I don't remember who they were now, but, I remember I did the whole practice that first day and, I didn't get assisted at all. And then, when I was leaving, one of the girls came out and she was like, "Hey," she's like, "you have a really strong practice. Like, where'd you learn to jump back like that?" And I was like, "I don't know. I just, you know, taught myself." Kind yeah. of. And she's like, "Well," she's like, "you look like you're kind of advanced, but you did all the postures out of order."
So, she totally busted you out.
Yeah. She's like, "I don't understand. Like you look advanced, but you don't know what you're doing."
Interesting.
So yeah, so I got a lot of postures out of order, and I think I was doing the left side and then the right side, instead of the right and the left, you know? So I was screwing a bunch of stuff. It was kind of,
I mean, at that stage, you just don't even know what you don't even know. Like, that's why you exactly. need to go to those courses or go to a teacher or whatever, so you can learn those little details.
Yeah, and I probably already been doing Ashtanga for like 2 years at this point, wow. you know, but just by myself, you know, so I didn't know.
That's crazy. Yeah. And now fast forward to today, you know, like, how did you even, you know, start your own place? Like, how did you get to do all of these? You know, you've been traveling all summer, and you know, I'm wondering, like, how did you even get there? You know, like,
yeah, it's
talk about zero, you know, to 100.
I think about that a lot, and it always kind of shocks me a little bit because I never went to that first yoga class intending to become a yoga teacher, and I never started Ashtanga intending to be a yoga teacher or ever to own my own space, you know, or anything. It's just kind of all snuck up on me little by little. But, you know, so after I, you know, went to that David Swenson thing, I seeked you out and practiced with you a handful of times. I practiced with David Kyle. I practiced with Kino and with Dave Christensen, in Miami. Also Patrick Nolan. I practiced with him in Miami. So I started like, cause there was no one really near me. You were the closest one to me and you were 3.5 hour drive.
Right.
So there was no one really too near me. I was just, every time there was a course or this or that, I was just like, "Oh yeah, I'll go there. I'll go here. I'll do this." I'm just trying to learn as much as I could. You know, your encouragement, I remember you told me all about going to India the first time. And when I was down in Miami, Kino and Day both, told me a lot about, you know, going to India and kind of gave me, you know, a little bit of encouragement to do it. Cause I, at the time I thought, you know, I was way too green. I thought I was just way too new and, you know, had no business going there. I thought you guys were all Jedi that went to India, you know. I was like, "Oh, I'm just a mortal, you know. I can't do that."
We've learned how to control the force, Mark.
Yes. So yeah, like it was basically from, you know, you and those two that it got my encouragement to go. But when I was in Miami, I met my good friend Lucas, who's from Fortaleza, Brazil, also authorized level 2 teacher. And then also Agatha, who, you know, you had on here once.
Yeah.
You know, she's a amazing videographer and photographer down in Miami. So I met those two, and the three of us became like immediate friends. We got really close. And Lucas had already been to Mysore once, but Agatha and I had not. And one night we were all out, I think we were having pizza or something, and Lucas was impressing us with his ability to put endless amounts of food in his stomach. That guy is amazing, unbelievable. But anyway, so we're like pigging out, you know, we're talking, and Lucas is like, okay, we need to all make a deal. Like, the three of us are going to go to India next year. So I was like, okay, like, great. You know, now I have the motivation. Let's do this.
Wow.
Yeah. So I missed the memo though, apparently. And I applied for January and February, where they applied for February and March. So, yeah, so I was there alone, my first trip, you know, that first month.
It's hard.
Trying to kind of figure the ways out a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. It takes not only is there culture shock, but there's just like an immense amount of like things that you don't understand where to get and do and all that stuff. It's,
yeah. Like where to get money for the, you know, for registration.
How to get 30,000 rupees for registration and all that crazy stuff.
Yeah.
So
it was a little bit of a learning curve. I think I hated it for the first 24 hours, and then I just immediately fell in love with Mysore.
Wow. You know? Yeah, I fell in love with it too on my first trip because it felt like sort of like home.
It felt better than home, almost.
Really?
In a sense. Yeah. I mean, well, it seems like after like a week of being there, you meet so many people, you know, and everywhere I walk, people be like, "Hey, Mark, how you doing?" And it just felt so like warm and welcoming. And I'm sure I know more people in Mysore than I do in Geneva where I live. And, you know, definitely I walk to and from work every day. And when I walk to and from work, you know, no one sticks their head out the window of their shop and says hi to me. And, you know, but in Mysore, it's so friendly. It's a great place. It really is a home away from home.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. It's pretty special.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, your first trip, was it a good one or did you struggle with it or you just fell in love with it and you're just like a complete romance with the place?
Yeah, I absolutely fell in love with it.
Really? The practice too, or just Mysore?
The practice especially.
Okay.
So, you know, my back pain, you know, way back when, you know, when I was having all that pain with my back, the yoga helped it, but it didn't totally fix it. But when I started doing primary series, it was a little bit of a love-hate relationship at first. Some days my back would feel good, some days it would feel bad, and I would kind of question the practice a little bit. I'd say, is this really what I need? But I just was I was kind of out of options. So I just was like, no, nope, I'm sticking to this, you know, because there are good days, you know, so hopefully this will fix me. But it wasn't until I learned how to backbend properly that my back pain really started going away. And it was that year in India that I caught for the first time and that my backbends were really getting deep. And I think the amount of like hip flexor opening that I got and just, I don't know, but and Strat's, you know, great assist that makes you feel so, you know, you feel so easy. You feel like you trust him so well, you know, that,
it's effortless basically.
It's effortless. Yeah. So I started having these back bends that were just so deep and my pain just totally vanished. I hear a lot of people say that, you know, like in India, like, you know, the first month is pain. The second month is, you know, tired. The third month is flying. But I mean, I just felt like pain free and flying like right off the bat. I felt great.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It was definitely a good trip for me.
And so, you went home and you were like, I need to go directly back. Were you that inspired to just be like, I need to get back there?
Yeah. Yeah, I was, you know, so I was inspired to start a program. You know, I talked to you about it. I talked to Day about it and cause I was a little nervous, you know, I thought, okay, is it bad to start a program if I'm not authorized? Like, am I stepping on people's toes? Am I like disrespecting the lineage? I didn't know. And everyone kind of gave me the same advice. They're like, no, just teach what you know, you know, don't teach postures you don't know, obviously, but you know, there's going to be people out there with less experience than you that you can still help. So I did, I started a program and that's what made me, you know, obviously want to keep going back. Yeah.
I mean, because it's like our lifeline as teachers, you know, you go over there and it's like, you know, we give, and it's like a time where we can receive. And that's like really, really special, you know, and, you know, and it just, you know, I come back every single time that I go, and it's literally, and you probably have a similar or same experience where you come back and it's just like a light bulb again, you know, it's just like, you're like glowing and giving the energy away in a much better way because you feel a little bit more organized or a little bit more sorted.
Yeah. That's well said. Absolutely. Yeah,
it's beautiful, really. Yeah. So, yeah. And so, tell us about Great Lakes Ashtanga Yoga.
So we're in Geneva, Ohio, which, even if you live in Ohio, you probably have never heard of it. It's, Geneva, Ohio is a town of about 7,000 or 8,000 people. It's pretty tiny. We maybe have 6 or 8 traffic lights, you know, something like that. Very, very different than Columbus.
It is different than Columbus, that's for sure.
And very different than Mysore, India, for sure.
Yeah.
But it's a small town here that I live in. It's up on the lake. We're not far from Erie, Pennsylvania. You know, so it's a very northeast corner of the state. And I would say about half my students that come in through the door every day are locals, from either Geneva or like the next town over or something. Mm-hmm. Then the other half of my students, are an hour plus away. You know, I have a lot of Cleveland people. I have a lot of people from Youngstown and Canton and Warren, Ohio. I have some people from Grove City, Pennsylvania. I have a girl who comes from Pittsburgh. You know, I see her once in a while. Now, these aren't daily students, obviously. Sure. You know, they're people that I see once a week, once every other week, you know. But each day, I mean, they make up about half of who comes through the door. You know, I have a lot of distant, you know, people that travel to me.
That's awesome.
Which is nice. I like that. And it brings a nice change of energy into the room, you know, whenever my students are like, oh, hey, I haven't seen you in 2 weeks. You know, it kind of makes them excited.
Right. That there's some out-of-town people there, and there's, you know, new, fresh energy and all that stuff there. That happens to us too, for sure.
Yeah.
And great. How did you get into workshops? I mean, you know, like I see that this whole summer you were super busy. Like, you know, how did you start to do workshops? Was it because you got authorized, or like, was it because you started getting asked, or what?
I started getting asked before I was authorized. You know, I had done quite a lot of workshops in the Northeast Ohio area, you know, between Cleveland and Geneva. I've done a lot of workshops, but I never had anything far away. I never really got invited to anything special until I think it was 2016. It was from Instagram, believe it or not. But, you know, like I have a fairly active Instagram account, and, you know, this lady was following me, and she'd always be like, oh, I love what you say. It's really inspiring, or this or that. She'd always make nice comments, and I'd comment back, thanks, you know, whatever. And then one day she's like, hey, she's like, I live in La Palma. It's a small island in the Canary Islands off the coast of Morocco. And she's like, we don't have an Ashtanga Shala here. We don't have really much of an Ashtanga community, but my husband and I both do Ashtanga, and we have some friends that do it with us. Like, would you come here?
Wow.
And I was like, yeah, what the hell?
I think you talked to me about that, and you were just like, I'm getting ready to go to Canary Islands. I was like, where is that?
Yeah, that's what I thought the first time I heard. You know, like, where are they? Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. And now you're doing it even more than, you know, it sounds like you've this summer over maybe like 5 or 6 places, right?
Yeah, it was a very busy summer. It just happened organically. You know, someone asked me, and I don't like to advertise. I don't email, you know, shalas and say, hey, this is what I can offer you at this rate and blah, blah, blah. And, invite me to your place. You know, I don't really do that. I get those emails a lot from other teachers, and it kind of turns me off a little bit.
I know.
I kind of like, I don't have a relationship with you. So I I have a lot of friends that I, you know, would invite here instead, you know, but, I've never done that. It's just been kind of a slow build up, but you know, the next year, maybe two places invited me, and the next year, three places. And, you know, it's just kind of slowly built up. But this year was probably the year that really kind of took off the most.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really awesome. I mean, and, you know, how about like, you know, how have you been dealing with like all of the difficult questions that, you know, Ashtanga Yoga is kind of asking itself right now?
So,
I mean, because, you know, there's a lot of heartbreaking things, and there's teachers that, you know, are obviously stepping down, going away, and all of that stuff. And people that me and you know, that, you know, we're, you know, close with, and, you know, there's a lot of heartbreak that seems like it's going around. And so I'm just wondering how you're kind of processing that.
Yeah. For me personally, and I know this is different for every person, and I never want to judge anyone for, you know, what their experience or their feelings, but, you know, what Patabi Joyce, you know, all the drama with that, what he did is definitely an awful thing, but I never had a relationship with him. He was never my teacher. And also I've never been, you know, sexually assaulted or anything like that. So I don't have, you know, that going against me. So for me, it was a simple, like, okay, so, you know, this guy proved that he didn't, you know, didn't really maybe live the yoga in every aspect of his life. But I mean, I still believe he was a good person and a good yogi. But, you know, we're all flawed. We're all flawed humans. And, but that doesn't really affect me or my small little community here, I don't feel like. The practice of Ashtanga has been gold for me. Yeah. It has given me so much health back. You know, my back was getting so bad that I couldn't even go climbing or skiing anymore, the things that I love to do. You know, and the less you move, not only physically you become less healthy, but mentally you become unhappy. You know, so I just, Ashtanga has done so much for me. So, you know, there's still a lot of merit in the practice. And a lot of people have seen what or heard what he did and have left the practice because they feel betrayed. But I, the only thing I can say to people like that is, you know, you have to listen to yourself, of course. But if the practice was good for you at one time, it should still be good for you. You know, like now if you were doing the practice and it wasn't good for you and, it, you know, you had a teacher and you were just simply doing what you're told and, you know, and you're ignoring injuries and this and that, then yeah, maybe it is a good time for you to step away. But I think if the practice has been beneficial to you, I don't think that this really changes it.
Yeah. You know, you believe in the practice today.
I do. I believe in it wholeheartedly. And, you know, one thing that's great about Great Lakes Ashtanga Yoga that I love is that I don't think we fit the mold of a lot of Ashtanga studios, Ashtanga shalas. Mm-hmm. You know, my oldest student is 75 years old. I have probably the majority of my students are in their 60s. You know, I have people that are cancer survivors. I have people who have lupus. I have people that are diabetics. You know, I have people that are obese. You know, I have everything, you know. And I really think that Ashtanga is a practice that is designed for all people, all body types. And, you know, I just think there's so much benefit in that. And I'm doing a lot of, I think, good things for some of the people here in Geneva that I think it'd be a real shame to just like walk away from the practice because there's some drama going on.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that, you know, for me, like I said, I never had a relationship with Patabi Joyce, so I don't feel betrayed by him. You know, I mean, Sharat is my teacher and I think Sharat's a good person. You're one of my teachers, you know, and these are the people I find inspiration from.
You know? I hear you loud and clear. And so I'm wondering, like, you know, what is yoga to you? You know, like you've talked about like health and all of that stuff, but I'm wondering, like, you know, how philosophical do you look at this practice of asana, and like, and what is that? What does the term yoga even mean to you?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, you know, I'm very much a physical person. I love exercise and I love that feeling I get from it. I love kind of that solitude of practicing alone or when I used to run, I loved the solitude of running by myself and being with my thoughts, being with my emotions, understanding myself, figuring out who I am. You know, when I was young, I was a pretty shy kid. You know, so it was, you know, hard for me to get to figure out kind of who Mark Garreau was. Yeah, I mean, I definitely love the physical aspect of the practice, but I'm also a Yoga Sutras nerd. You know, I really love reading the sutras and just trying to sit down and apply, like figure out how these things apply to our modern lifestyle. You know? And I think it's pretty fascinating that, you know, we don't know exactly when the sutras were written. Some people say 2,000 years ago. Some people say that's not possible, but we do know that they're old, you know, the sutras. Right. But if you think about your life, like, you know, Taylor Hunt, you know, in Columbus, Ohio, driving this car, you know, doing this, wearing this, you know, all this stuff that defines kind of like, your lifestyle right now. If you think about all those things and compare them with Patanjali or any of the people that were learning from him, the sutras, you know, way back when they were created, like, what do we have in common with those people? Like, nothing really, except for we're still trying to figure out who we are. We're still trying to reach enlightenment, you know, but otherwise, like, what do we share with those people? Yeah. You know, I mean, their lifestyles were so different. So I find that just really fascinating that even though it's such a, an old text, a lot of the sutras still apply to us, you know, if you sit down and break them down. Yeah, I don't know. I really like sitting down with my students on Saturdays after lead class, and we dissect a couple sutras and have open discussions. And
that's great.
Yeah, I feel that the practice really has so much mental and emotional healing that can come with it. And of course, you know that. You know, I think the physical is very important, but I think we can't get blinded and, you know, only treat this as a physical practice when there's so many like tidbits, you know, there's so many other things that we can take into our daily lives.
It's crazy, you know, crazy the amount of spirituality that is found in doing these yoga postures, the amount of mental health benefit, emotional health, you know, fit and also physical health. Like, you know, all of a sudden it's got like all four of the aspects, like all kind of tied together. And it's really fascinating to see how it all plays out. Even if someone walks in as like a fitness person, you know, like yourself, and then all of a sudden you start realizing that, oh, wait a second, like my relationship to what I eat is different. Relationship to how I treat my neighbor is different. Like over and over and over again, like you have these conversations and it's really fascinating. So I agree with you for sure.
Totally amazing. Yeah. I think it's really neat that, you know, I you could probably never pick up the sutras and just do asana, but you'd still find the philosophy I think you're looking for, you know, or maybe that you weren't looking for. It might sneak up on you. But you know, every one of these asanas creates a different sensation in the body. And that sensation can be different for me than it is for you, obviously, but it creates a different sensation in the body. And those sensations go right to the mind. You know, our nervous system picks all that up, and you know, it creates some sort of reaction in the mind, some sort of like emotional reaction or something. And that's what we have to learn how to sit with. You know, that's what we have to learn how to deal with that stuff. You know, like, hey, why is this silly back bend causing me to hate my teacher right now? Or why is this silly back bend making me scared? You know, or whatever. And then we just, you know, the more we do that, the more we refine those reactions that we have from the physical sensation. And it's, I think we get just as much philosophy just from simply doing. But it's powerful.
Why? I think you've kind of already answered this question, but I just want to get clear on it. So, I mean, why do you show up every single day at the top of your mat?
I mentioned earlier that I was an ADD hyperactive kid. And when I was 12 years old, my mom took me to this climbing gym. It was actually a gymnastics center, but they had a climbing wall that they built in it. So she took me there hoping to burn off some of my extra energy. And what I found was focus for the first time in my life, I think. I felt this you know, when I'm hanging on the wall, I feel very like present with what I'm actually doing. I'm not thinking about all these other things like my mind would the rest of the time. And that's why I got so hooked on climbing. I mean, physically it was very challenging, but it was like the mental, the rush of like being so present that I loved. And the harder, I still get that when I climb, the harder and harder routes I do, or the more exposed, or, you know, the more committing the routes are, the more I feel that. And it's a very neat connection. And Ashtanga is the only other thing that can kind of compare to that.
Wow.
You know, it's the only thing that really gets me feeling present, you know, and that's just, I don't know, that's just a great feeling. It really is.
Yeah.
And it keeps me sane.
I think it keeps us all sane. That focus is like, I think, it's part of that. That presence is part of the reason why I show up at the top of my mat, you know, because it's like we can all run 100 million miles an hour in our head. But when you get into the practice, it brings you right to the here and the now, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for being on the show, Mark, and, basically kind of sharing your soul and telling us, all of the ins and outs of your story. And so I appreciate you being on here, and I appreciate, you know, all the love and support that your family, or you and Sarah and your family, have offered me. And, you know, I consider you kind of like extended family for me as well. Like Ashtanga is like, it's really beautiful. And so I appreciate you being on the show, and I, for all the listeners out there, go and check out Geneva and go check out Great Lakes.
Thank you, Taylor. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. If you want more information about Ashtanga Yoga, visit ashtangayogacolumbus.com. You can also check out my website, which is taylorhuntyoga.com. See you guys next time.